Chapter 8, Churches. Din don, din don, din don. It was 5 in the morning in Gorizia, but for the Ursulina Superior, it was customary to get up at dawn to pray together with her sisters. That day, however, Mariana Locatelli had to respond to the letter from the Bishop of Trieste Antonio Leonardis, dated Christmas 1822. The new year had come now, Thursday, 2nd January 1823. The bells kept on ringing, waking the nuns and neighbors. Mariana's thoughts went to the family, town, and country churches. In Angoris, in the right wing of the villa, there is the chapel of Santa Cecilia, previously dedicated to San Giorgio. It was dedicated to all saints officiated against storms and adversity. Therefore, until a few years ago, from Angoris the signal of the beginning and end of the firing of the anti-hail rocket started when the dangerous clouds approached. On the altar, a 17th century altarpiece depicts the Madonna with her child, with Santa Cecilia and Santa Rosa of Lima, or Santa Barbara on the right, it is not clear, while on the left are Sant'Andrea, Sant'Antonio, and San Francesco Saverio. On the ceiling, little angels of always interested children, which, when bored, look up to the sky. In 1861, Giorgio Locatelli ordered in his will that the universal heir should have an annual mass celebrated in St. George's Day in the public chapel in Angoris, in suffrage of his soul, and also every November 23rd for his late mother, but also to do good for the Church of Burniano. In the center of Cormons, there is the other family chapel, completed in 1705 in the Portico of Revolt. Mariana recalled an altarpiece depicting the Annunciation, while St. Francis and St. Anthony were painted on the sides. On the walls of the corridor, there were 3 biblical paintings, Job, the Takeoff of the Baptist and Judith, and 6 canvases of allegorical nature. She also remembered that her father had told her about some bell ringers in the family. Since becoming Mother Superior in Gorizia, she had had the time and opportunity to do a lot of research. Everything was confirmed. The first had been Bernardino Locatello, a smelter who had come to Gorizia and already in 1548, it appears, to have a land on this side of the Corno, for which he paid 21 Rhine florins a year to the chamber registry. His oldest bell, from what Mariana had later discovered, dates back to 1553, made for the parish of San Servolo in San Dorligo, under the Petazzi castle. Then, one, the following year, was in Vreme in Carniola, while the last note is from 1569 for the Church of San Rocco in Novacco. Among the ancient papers, he had also found a certain Ludovico, 1630, and then on the bells themselves, the acronym GFL and Giovanni Francisci Lo. But Gianfrancesco Lo was none other than a Locatelli, perhaps the son of Ludovico, of the said bell ringer. branch, as De Brumatti explains, a family among the old men, but not so new, who came to settle in the city at the time of the Emperor Maximilian Chitra, i.e. after 1564. In fact, perhaps in memory of his grandfather to the son of Gianfranco and Maria Locatelli, baptized on 8 May 1631, in the presence of the godparents Rodolfo Pesler and Caterina Coronini, he was given the name Lodovico. The chapel in the parish church of Sant'Ilario and Taziano in Gorizia is that of San Niccolò and, before 1591, it was kept by the priest Giuseppe Locatelli. The other discovery concerned the famous Pacassi, a document attested to the work of Giovanni the Old and his son Leonardo in Castagnevizza, and how, until today, 14 February 1691, have been fully paid and satisfied as much for the works done in the shelter of the church and chapels of Mr. Baron Andrea Locatello. Mariana wondered if some interventions in the churches of Langoris and Cormons were also attributable to them. After all, Leonardo had created the main altar of the Cathedral of Gradisca, as well as the altars of the churches of Chiopris, Capriva, and Mariano. Giovanni Pacassi, the young man, once the chapel of the Immaculate Conception in Medea was built, was called to Vienna, to then move to Wiener Neustadt, where in 1716 the much more famous Niccolò was born. In 1769, he will rise to the same rank as the Locatellis, Baron, or rather, Freiherr von Pacassi. Always in the 18th century, his great uncle will donate funds for the creation of a monastery. With a will dated April 14, 1701, the doctor in both laws, Giovanni Andrea Locatelli, left the Dominicans of Farra heirs of his substances, provided that they built a church and convent in Cormons and opened an elementary school for the local children. Except that as the years went by, they replaced lessons in philosophy and theology for clerics. The Mother Superior also discovers that the parish church of Farra is in jus patronage to the heirs of Ludovico Locatelli of Mossa. In the mid-18th century, his ancestors also had manor properties in Mariano, in whose parish the Church of Corona belongs. On April 7, 1623, the brothers Giacomo and Salvatore Locatelli of Cormons renounced in favor of the Church of Corona to one of their fields located in Monticello and called the Pestador, for which they contributed annually with 2 baskets of corn and 3 buckets of wine. After undergoing a long series of thefts and robberies at the time of the Gradiscan Wars, the Locatellis preferred to donate the piece of land. The gift of the 3 buckets of wine remained in use until the beginning of the 1900s. The research occasionally distracted Marianna from prayers and teachings, but it was so involving to discover the links with the churches, the gifts in wheat and wine, the bequests. February 5th, 1635, Cormons. Declaration by which Antonio Locatello of Eilenburg renounces in his own name and that of his brothers to the field said on the shore in favor of the church of Saint Adalbert, provided that his settler can provide for the harvest of the current year. Sebastianus Colombicius, a notary in Cormons, whose family would have been related to the Locatellis, subscribes to other deeds. August 29, 1663. Josephus Morsanus, with the consent of his wife, D. Susanna, and the license of the parish of priest of Cormons, D. Stephanus del Mestri, of the chambers and the mayors, gives to the D. Antonius Locatellus de Eilenburg a house with courtyard for 71 ducats, and against the assumption of the charges due to said church, consisting of 2 baskets of wheat, 3 of rye, and 6 lire of money, up to an estimated total of 28 ducats, 1 lira, and 3 coins. September 18, 1670. To release a debt to the Church of Cormons, Giacomo Rodella, a testamentary curator of Giovanni Giacomo, Q. Francesco Locatello, gives part of a piece of land located in the area of Cormons in the locality known as Al Monticello to the chamberlain of the same church, Giovanni Novaiolo. Who knows how many red wines produced in Langoris or Novali will be served to officiate the masses. Vinum debet esse naturale ex genimine, vitis et non corruptum, says the canon code. And he continued to read from the sermons. Propter penas langoris est largitus eis lectus ubi requiescunt, talamun regis et regine, qui omnia mala resanant. Chapter 9. Colonel Locatello and the Wars. The heraldry owl is a symbol of prudence, silence, and victory. In the case of the Locatelli, active people who managed to get rich by receiving noble favors and diplomas, retained the surname of Locatelli as their surname given to them by the population that hosted them. They assumed the owl was a coat of arms from the Bergamo area, Locke. One of these had happened in the middle of the 16th century in Gradisca with Giovanni Antonio. His son, Giovanni Andrea, obtained from the emperor the concession of a coat of arms along with a diploma given by Graz on December 17, 1569. The coat of arms was then recognized by Ferdinando II in 1615. The third diploma was issued by Ferdinando III in 1634 to the son of Giovanni Andrea, Giobatta, and his sons Andrea, Antonio, and Locatello, with a confirmation of the nobility, the extension of the coat of arms, and the addition of the predicate of Eulenburg, Owl Castle. Locatello, who was he? In an old book, Carlotta found a biography. Giobatta Locatelli had 3 children. Major Andrea, who was a doctor of medicine, showed uncommon knowledge and great self-sacrifice and value as a military doctor. Initially assigned to the armies in Piedmont and later to those of Silesia during the period in which the plague was massacring it. Antonio and Locatello, captain in the imperial army who was famous for his strenuous valor, explained in various battles and fights. Among these, we will notice the retreat of the imperial army from Silesia, where Locatelli, with a few brave men, managed to stop the enemy at Stania, defending the bridge until all the army had failed to cross the river. In Frankfurt, on the Oder, during the siege carried out with a few soldiers, he took possession of the enemy trenches, killing 6 men by his own hand, as the imperial diploma attests. Locatello, yes, the famous colonel of the imperial army who had fought in Gradisca, in Silesia, in Schweidnitz, Liegnitz, Neisse, Lützen, Frankfurt, on the Oder, Troppau, Zittau, etc., defending the fortress of Dömitz. Ferdinando III, after giving him the baronial title in 1648, gave him a farm of 300 fields. A decision already taken on February 7, 1644. Thus, it is described in another dusty tome. In his younger years, he embraced the military state and began the arduous and dangerous career captained by Baldassarre Maradas. when the soldiers of the Venetian Republic opposed Gradisca. He was a captain, leader of the sentinels, Caesarian Ciliarch, and finally, for many years, governor of the Dolmetsch in Lower Saxony, where with value and fearlessness he defended the fortress for Caesar with committed loyalty. He eluded the machinations of his enemies with stratagems. In his uncontested courage, he sustained extreme hunger. He proved himself in the Danish, Italic, and Germanic War. He found himself in many struggles, and his body was covered with noble scars received on the field of the Parisian glory, for which distinct merits the august monarch Ferdinand III many times honored him with the title of very strong hero, and promoted him, together with his brother Antonio, to the rank of Baron of the Sacred Roman Empire. In the villa, there was a print of the well-known Dutch engraver Fredericus Hulsius, which portrays Josephus Locotel de Locotellis Baro in Schönwelt, with the motto, "For the better," and the year 1649. So he was a hero, a leader in the 30 Years' War under the Emperor's orders. But the service to the imperial court had begun with the father. In difficult research, Carlotta was helped by a young surgeon, graduate in history and librarian in Venice, who had been injured on the front of the Karst and was happy to extend his convalescence in Langoris. The Italian army was lacking in officers, and graduates like him were promoted to second lieutenants. However, it was not his aspiration. The nights spent in the villa allowed Carlotta to consult the old papers in the archive. The origins in Bergamo were proven in a document of 1613 concerning properties in Tapugliano, Jacobus Locatellus, Bergomensis habitans in Cormons, son of the late Baptist from Bergamo. The legacy in favor of the sons Giovanni, Giovan Battista, Antonio, known as Salvatore, and Lucio, included properties in Cormons and in the Bergamo area, registered to Jacopo and his brother Bernardo. A state pass issued in 1596 to Locotel Johann Baptist, former court courier, is kept in the Vienna State Archives. A letter from the State Archives was, instead, dated back to February 7, 1607, perhaps addressed to the sovereign, Locotel, therefore. This was the spelling that was used at the time in the German-speaking states. In fact, Locotel de Locotellis can be found on the engraving of Hulsius. Years later, on March 8, 1634, Johann Baptist Locatellus and his son Andreas, doctor of medicine, Anton and Locatel, imperial captain, receive confirmation of the nobility. The exemptio, exemption from civil service, the salvaguardia, a sort of safe conduct. With two coats of arms preserved, one in black and white and one in color. Andrea has a coat of arms dated 1646 and preserved in Agram, that is in Zagreb. Sometimes, however, their name was Lucatello. It appears for the first time linked with the Piccolomini regiment in a list of officers from December 1633 onwards. Subsequently, it is indicated as captain at the head of a company of 76 mounted or troops on horseback. And then, here are the colonel's correspondence, some letters with encrypted messages, so small, written by Dolmetsch. Responses received from other commanders, strange symbols and numbers made what was written incomprehensible, but Carlotta was too curious. She had no peace in those moments of war in which she lived. She wanted to delve deeper into that conflict that had started 3 centuries earlier. She had studied it superficially in school. She barely remembered the clashes between Catholics and Protestants, between Savoy and German princes, between Danes and Bohemians, but without knowing how to place them. A name had remained in her mind, Wallenstein. Now, she held in her hands autographed letters of the great leader, together with those of Gonzaga and Montecuccoli. Sometimes, she would spend nights rummaging through the candle-lit papers, then wake up and spend the day caring for wounded and cholera-affected soldiers, replacing the nuns who occasionally went to visit their sisters in San Quirino. One evening, with amazement, she found an encrypted letter, but decrypted by Locatelli himself. So she managed to interpret the others, which she had set aside resignedly. This discovery gave her new energy and, little by little, regardless of the Austrian grenades and shrapnel, she reconstructed Eilenburg's 18 years of service, entering, as if by magic, into a distant world. Perhaps he had the fire baptism in the Gradiscan Wars, distinguishing himself under the orders of General Maradas. Knight of Malta, he arrived in Gorizia on 27 May 1616 as a colonel in the service of the King of Spain. Following the death of Trautz Mandorf, he became general and assumed command of the army. Maradas died in Silesia in 1640, where Locatello also fought. But if the Gradiscan Wars ended in 1617, Locatello could not have been born in 1608. So? Asked Carlotta. Born in Gorizia in 1608, he distinguished himself under General Maradas in the Gradisca War, and in 1632 he became colonel. He fought bravely on the Steinach Bridge in Styria. He fought in Schweidnitz, Leitnitz, Nisse, Lützen, Frankfurt, Tropavia, Zwittau, Stuttgart, Magdeburg, Rottenau, and defended the fortress of Mecklenburg and Glatz. In 1642, he became commander of Namslau and then governor of Dömitz, as well as serving as the governor general of Silesia. In 1637, he conquered the imperial city of Giengen, where the cost of accommodation amounted to 5,969 florins. Since the city was unable to pay the requested amount by the scheduled date, the burgmasters, Amann and Braun, were brought by Locatelli as hostages to Hochstadt on the Danube. In another list, in December 1638, Locatello appeared for the last time with the rank of captain in the Jungpiccolomini regiment. His company now had a strength of 38 mountain and 26 not ridden. His soldiers were mixed. In the coming years, he would then create his own infantry regiment, hiring soldiers in the 30 Years' War, Peditum Colonellus. In 1640, Lieutenant Colonel, he was governor of Dömitz. 4 years later, having become a colonel, he wrote a report on his state services over the course of 23 years. It seems that he remained commander of the city until 14 September 1648. Because on that date, the court war council decreed farewell to the former commander of the fortress of Dömitz, Lieutenant Colonel Locatello Locatelli. Perhaps he began his military career against Denmark and witnessed the first siege of Mantua. Past ties him to Don Luigi of Gonzaga, who in 1645, with a ciphered letter, warns him that the enemy troops are on the Silesian border and orders him to leave immediately with his regiment from Namslau, leaving there a captain and a company of Presidium. February 12, 1645, Locatello Locatelli scolds Count Schlick for preventing a military ban in Silesia. He was, in 1645, Obrist, on duty, and is called on the occasion of the fighting against Swedish troops. Ludovico Gonzaga wrote to Gallas on 22 October 1645. Presumably, the Swedes are against Glatz and want to take over the city. I had therefore sent Locatelli. He himself does not have the impression that the enemy did not want to conquer Glatz, because Torstensson had no infantry, and Königsmark still in the vicinity of Weißkirchen, Leipzig, and Fülnik. According to correspondent dates, however, in July of that year he was still in Namslau as commander. Indeed, the great strategist Montecuccoli wrote to him from Ross the previous March 23rd. It seems to him impossible that the enemy, with a small force of 600 men, dared to act against that stronghold. In any case, he recommended that he keep on guard, using the Silesian cavalry to help as needed. Carlotta could go to the villages near Langoris to buy raw materials. Soldiers and officers settled in requisition houses, but nothing fatal happened in the rear. 3 centuries earlier, it looked very different. The weapons were primordial. The troops faced each other in an orderly way. There were neither automatic rifles nor machine guns. No gas was used and no one died in the trenches. Without long-range cannons and planes, cities were occupied. It is a letter from Gonzaga that shines a light on what was happening in the rear. Writing from Ross on November 2, 1646, he recommended to Locatelli to strictly forbid the soldier to harass the bourgeoisie with insults or with looting in the cities, as he recommends not to commit crimes in the village of Maestritz, where a corporal and 2 musketeers were killed by those villagers. Here is, for example, one of the many decisions made by the city of Gradisca in the late 1600s. It was resolved that the villagers would contribute to the infantry for the need of the soldiers with candles, wood, and straw, as it is practiced in the hereditary countries of SM. That it is kept in good discipline. They should, from time to time, do some gifts of hay, wine, and other that is considered appropriate, and that even to the military itself, when it is contained, without insulting or harassing the people, give, from time to time, a mug of wine each. The years of greatest satisfaction began. In 1647, he received the title of Baron. In 1648, he then asked 1,000 fields because of the 18 years of service, following a request made in his praise by the Archduke brother Leopoldo Guglielmo. In 1649, he will be portrayed by Frederick van Hulsen, in short, for the better. Even if they were difficult years in Cormons, on the 1st of April 1647, Lucia, wife of Romano Tomba and Antonio Bevilacqua of Borgnano, were accused of witchcraft and therefore burnt in the square in front of a cheering crowd. But he did not completely cease his service. On the 18th of July, 1647, the colonel appeared in von Fenden's reports on Wrocław and was mentioned for the command post. Also, the settlement of the Locatelli regiment dates back to that year among the units present in Silesia. He is certainly at home on March 2, 1649. Since in Gradisca, in the house of the noble Geminiano Comelli, the Diet meets, and Sirs Antonio and Colonel Brothers Locatelli of Cormons, with 22 votes for the yes and 1 for the no, they are promoted to provincial nobles of Gradisca. An important fact, even an economic privilege, given the decision taken a few years later, that the hosts must first remove the wines of the nobility and other inhabitants, and after these, when there are no more, they should take those of shops from the merchants of Gradisca. At the dissolution of the army in 1650, 54 were those enrolled or hired by him between 1640 and 1649. Many veterans of the 30 Years' War enter the regiment of Ramft in Carinthia in 1651. Some instead follow him to find settlement in Kamnik, in Skofia Loka, or in Krain. Corporal Hans Krieger from Gdansk, serving Locatelli since 1646, born in 1615 and ended up in Tregelwang, follows him with his wife and 3 children. Georg Meyer from Meissen goes to Bischofslach with his wife. In 1656, Locatelli is mentioned on the occasion of a mutiny by the imperial army. Always for the vile money. the planned division of the old regiments had created bad blood, especially since half of the Ramt regiment had to take over only for Locatelli, since at times when he commanded the fortress on El Badomitz, but he prefers to make disappear his people's wages in his pockets. On April 11, 1664, the commander of the Olomouc fortress, Winter, wrote to Wrangel about the Locatelli infantry regiment that was in Frankstadt in Moravia. But by now he had ceased his service, deceased probably in 1668. His fame will remain alive. So much so that a regiment was established with his name, remaining active also in the following centuries. In many German historical books that tell of wars of the 17th and 18th century, there are officers of the Locatelli regiment who later became important leaders. Among these, Camillo of Colloredo, court chamberlain, whose faithful and prolonged service is remembered for 9 years, suggesting that he had taken part in the various phases of the Austrian Succession War, which took place between 1740 and 1748. Likewise, Giuseppe Venceslao, Prince of Liechtenstein, ruler of his country, had even been commander of the Locatellischen Cuirassier Regiment before becoming a great strategist, celebrated as one of the most famous generals of the Austrian army. Chapter 10, The Villa. Built in the first half of the 18th century, according to some sources from 1735, raised by one floor and considerably modified in the 19th century, it underwent a renewal after every world war. From a pastoral visit on the 9th of April 1753 by the new Archbishop at Thames, the presence of an extra oppidum church seems evident. Dedicated to all the patron saints against storms and adversities attached to the residence. In 1811, as attested by some cadastral documents, the villa was used as a holiday home and was owned by Baron Giorgio Locatelli. In 1864, Michele wrote to his brother-in-law, Gian Paolo Poresini. Infallibly we await you with your kids in the first month of the coming month, August, in Cormons, and then we will decide what will be done about your stay in Langoris. In 1868, in an article, it is called Schloss Angoris, or Castle. The defendants, we read, first visited the garden and the park, and then went up the hill into the park, from which you can enjoy a splendid panorama. There, numerous choirs were sung, and then the whole company returned to the castle and the hall. The Great War broke out, and the seizure of the property was an inevitable consequence. Initially, the villa and the lands behind it were requisitioned from the first days of the conflict, with an ordinance headed Municipality of Cormons and Povia. They were made available to the Italian army, which uses the building as a military hospital. During the requisition, a monthly allowance of 750 Italian lire was paid to the Locatelli family. On 6 December 1916, in the midst of the Italian military occupation, the seizure of the realities of Baron Giorgio Locatelli was noted on the tabular book. Seizure which will end on June 7, 1919, with the return of the assets. Elena d'Aosta, in her memoirs, calls it the big house. Other descriptions are found in Sister Filomena's diary. Mendes had the house ready for us and for the officers in the Locatelli castle. He had our house divided so well that we had no communication with the officers. He had a wall raised to divide our terrace. We had two large bedrooms and a small room, four large windows looking out over the panorama of Cormons, a beautiful room for refectory and a small kitchen. Everything was divided so well it looked like a little convent. The tribune that looked into the church where the Blessed Sacrament was worshipped was our greatest consolation. But on December 11, 1915, our home caught fire. In our dining room, there was a stove. Because of the great heat it sent, the reeds that were between the walls lit up and the fire started. 2 months earlier, in a letter Sister Maria Augusta wrote to the superior in Genoa, Langoris, New Italy, Villa Locatelli, Hospital 230. In the evening, before falling asleep, I feel a great consolation in looking at the roof of the barn that serves us as a dormitory, which reminds me so much of the hut in Bethlehem. And here is what Raffaele Paolucci, medical officer, wrote. In the rooms on the ground floor of the villa, we put many straw mattresses on the ground, rather close to each other, so as to leave just the necessary passage for the doctor and nurse. We slept in a kind of attic, which may have been a large, capable barn, but which is directly under the roof and therefore is very hot. We had placed our bunks in the corners of the attic, bunks that had been made by ourselves with wooden frames, supporting a sackcloth, and on this a whole lot of straw. Tiredness and youth made these beds comfortable and our sleep tasty. Paolucci also let us know of the existence of a tub in the garden. Sometimes, however, the croaking of frogs in a large tub in the rear garden of the villa was so high and violent that it put a strain on our nerves. Then I had the unfortunate idea of throwing a bucket of quicklime into the tub one morning. It seemed, at the moment, that nothing happened in the underwater life of the very large and deep tank. But what was my dismay the following morning when I saw the hundreds of frogs I had killed floating with their white bellies looking towards the sun. Once the war was over, I was immediately restored and enlarged. Here's a small account for it. In 1919, in fact, a newspaper entitled Building Disaster in Cormons, in which the editor writes, news came from Cormons that in Angoris, a small village nearby, the villa and reconstruction of Baron Locatelli collapsed. 60 workers were employed in the work, taken on by the company L'Italianissima. 2 dead and 7 wounded are deplored. The property changed owner in November 37, passing on to Max Orefice, and from February 1, 1939 was registered with SATCA, Society of Transformation for Agricultural Running. Shareholders were the brothers Giuseppe, Luigi, and Orlando Miani. Despite being in the height of the Second World War, the new owners entrusted the restoration and furnishing of the villa to the Roman architect Tullio Rossi in 1939, and in 1940 also the renovation of the annex. On the ground floor of the villa, a welcoming billiard room strikes Enrico di Chambord. Next to the door, there are 2 portraits. On the right, a gentleman is holding a sheet of paper with a geometric design and the date 1756. On the left, the presumed wife. On the larger walls, there are 2 large naval battle scenes off the island of Malta, perhaps against the Barbary corsairs or against the Ottoman fleet. But the attention returns to the green table. the game had been invented at the French court by its ancestors, so the Bourbons were great players. The first known billiard table is the one ordered by Louis XI, sovereign of France, in 1470. The Sun King installed one in Versailles, and in 1792, Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette played pool on the eve of their imprisonment. The prince knew this game very well, but something was not right. There were 9 pins instead of 5. "Here we play the Goriziana, monsieur," said the baron. Goriziana is a specialty of Italian billiards. There are also Boccetta la Goriziana, which you play without a stick and with 4 balls instead of 3. For example, while the Italian 5-pin game specialty was practiced in the courts, especially at the Bourbons, the specialty called Goriziana, as the etymology suggests, was born in the countryside and was immediately a game for the populace. This information pleased the Count of Chambord a lot, so he remembered having read, years before, about the billiards on Il Diavoletto in 1854, and also what Karl von Zörnig had written in his renowned volume, Das Land, Görz und Gradisca, The Princely Counties of Gorizia and Gradisca, printed in Vienna in 1873. At Serpenica, near Caporetto, good chalk is obtained, especially for billiard cues. During the Great War, the Italian officers will spend a few hours of leisure in the billiard room. For part of the furnishings of the villa, as well as the Palace of Cormons, we can assume that Mariano's chairmen were hired. An activity born thanks to some carpenters who, at the beginning of the 19th century, added to the manufacture of furniture an order that of the raw chairs that they sold, especially in Trieste. Around 1850, the business became particularly profitable. The number of artisans and commercial outlets increased. Udine, Tirol, and the East. In 1877, the Mutual Aid Society of Mariano was set up so that the chairman could receive help in the event of illness. The flag of the company was solemnly blessed on Sunday, the 31st August, 1879, with the intervention of the highest provincial authorities and a great popular contest. Godmother was the Baronessa Maria Locatelli, born Strasoldo Villanova. Later, in 1880, a special school was born, and in 1883, a cooperative between chairmakers with 32 affiliates. That year, the production of chairs was 780 pieces. In 1912, it would have been 125,412. Chapter 11, The Kitchen. In the morning, we had coffee and milk. At noon, lunch, snack at 4. In short, we were like in our own community, wrote Sister Filomena, sitting on a large wooden chair. She had just settled in with her sisters at the Cormons Monastery, arriving on 27 August 1915 in Langoris, their final destination, the soldiers give them 4 cups of broth, tin bowls with rust, little bread, 4 pieces of meat, and little wine. It was not the warmest welcome, but at least, on the same day, they received different things, among which 8 kitchen towels, 2 kitchen aprons, 6 cotton tea towels, jugs, bowls, as well as furnishings, much poorer than the ones in the villa, to start settling in the Locatelli properties requisitioned by the army. Mattresses, 8. Iron beds, 8. Iron nightstands, 6. Iron trays, 8. Big wooden chairs, 12. White wooden stools, 7. Wooden easels, 4. wooden coat racks too. In addition, two walnut drawers and one walnut showcase taken from the elegant furniture of the villa. A few months later, the situation had slightly improved. On Christmas 1915, in the morning, we passed the chocolate and milk to the injured. For lunch, we gave pasta with sauce to the ones who were more comfortable, roast beef, biscuits, oranges, marsala. In the archive left in the library, there was also Marianna's handwritten recipe book, who, among the many namesakes, may have been Maria Anna Locatelli, born in Cormons, January 10, 1832, by Baron Antonio and Beatrice Nonis. Reading the cookbook helped Carlotta discover the gastronomic traditions of the land of Cormons, as it was defined by the author. On the one hand, we perceived the changes that had occurred during the 1800s, including the measurement systems. On the other, we noticed how the legacies of the Friulian, Austrian, Slovenian, and Venetian traditions were enriched with contaminations from other parts of Europe. Some, unknown, such as the Friulian Sunkenfleck or the Kugelhof from Kugelhof. Other, easily understandable dishes, from the Viennese-style crostoli to the German macaroni, from the Hungarian golas to Greece and liver gnocchi, to get to the risotto alla milanese and the French dried fry. It looked like a merry-go-round of flavors and inventions, sometimes the result of a proud affirmation of its history. It was the case of the Furlan Schnitzel, an undue appropriation of the Milanese, also called Wiener Schnitzel, and of the Gubana from Gorizia, well distinct from the homonymous one of the Cividale tradition. At the time, in Piazza Locatelli, every morning from 5 a.m., the expert fruit market took place, favored by the arrival of the railway in 1860. On Wednesdays and Fridays, there was the weekly market. During the cherry period, they treated up to 10,000 quintals. "That's why you make cherry strudel," the girl exclaimed, looking at Mother Pia, superior of the Sisters of Providence of Cormons. Marianna's handwriting was elegant, but some terms were not familiar to Carlotta. "What is office chocolate?" she asked Mother Pia. "It was the bitter one found in large squares used for icing." "And the Hungarian fine flour?" "It was the one sold in large blue paper packages. The wheat arrives by train to Rubbia, where the white barons have the mill." Carlotta immediately thought of the Villa Bianchi in Grado. "But what did you eat before the war?" she asked furiously. Mother Pia, who must have been between 65 and 70 years old, recounted her memories in detail. "In Collio, the population fed on polenta and bread, most of which is still cooked today by the Pistori of Gorizia or Cormons. Fruits are also used for the preparation of desserts, as you discovered earlier, and chestnut is also sought after. Potatoes were grown by all, which served for family needs, just like beans, barley, and coarse wheat, which we call polcua. The wealthiest families all have pork, an indispensable condiment for a soup, a barley soup with beans, as well as for the sopa crovata. Soup with bread, which are the healthiest and favorite foods of our hills. The Easter party is spent drinking the moro, always accompanied by gubana, pinza, fujazza, and parsuto desk. The egg is eaten with lettuce and lard. The diet had also been described by a doctor in 1781, Antonio Muslich, in his work Clima Goriziense, written in Latin. Carlotta has studied this dead language, which had enlivened her evenings with translations. The text sounded roughly like this. "The inhabitants of the hills support themselves with watery porridge, black bread, seasonal fruit, vegetables, legumes, a little bread, and a lot of wine." On another page, we read that there were vines, vineyards, and olive groves, fruit trees. The hills of the Collio enjoy this fertility, along with many villages, including the city of Cormons, where there are beautiful noble houses, the convent of the Capuchin Fathers, the hospice of the Dominicans. A lot of excellent white wine is produced, all kinds of seasonal fruit, pears, cherries, apples, peaches, apricots, figs, almonds. But in the villa, there were also some inventories, the so-called ventilations, with the goods falling within the legacy of the rich deceased. Very interesting. From the one drawn up in 1761 after the death of Lorenzo Antonio Locatelli, who lived in Gradisca, but with possessions in Mossa and Vipulzano, he found this. Silverware, 4 spoons, 2 forks and 2 knives, 4 small coffee spoons with no pitcher, porcelain, 34 soup plates, 3 coffee cups with saucer, 1 bowl, 4 small plates and 1 coffee cup, 10 coffee cups with their saucers, and 1 sugar bowl with its Sassonia porcelain lid, 2 bowls. Furthermore, wheat, white barley, black barley, local broad beans, Yapovan broad beans, black lentils, red lentils. Who would have ever thought that they would have cultivated right there different types of barley, beans, and lentils? Then, skimming through Giacomo Locatelli's goods inventory from 1796, she read 5 Flanders tablecloths and napkins for 12 people, tablecloths and napkins of 18, 6 set ends worked at home, 14 set of Germany, 2 fine tablecloths, 16 fine tablecloths worked at home. Kitchen belongings, 12 copper casseroles, 1 copper pan, 1 heater, 3 fryers, 1 copper tile, 2 iron tiles, 1 copper plate, 1 iron cape, 1 chain. In silverware, 1 cutlery bag for 12 people with bent tiles and 1 large spoon, 2 coffee machines, 2 cups, 4 chandeliers, 12 small coffee spoons. From Francesco Antonio's inventory, finally, from 1802, 1 grill, an old spit. The great spread of coffee at home emerged as early as in the 1700s, along with a system of cooking under the embers, but also on the grill, with a spit on the fireplace, as well as the use of frying in a pan, maybe fish. One thing was certain, they appreciated the Istrian oil more than the local one. From the letters of Michele Locatelli to his brother-in-law Giampaolo Polesini, we discover that he had oil sent from Istria in December 1863. Indeed, he even asked him to have a barrel built in Poreč and to send the oil to him in January. Delighted by all this information, Carlotta transcribes the recipes she likes most. Woodcock soup. Take the interiors of the woodcocks, ham, parsley, salt and pepper, and pound it all together finely. Finely chopped bread in an elongated shape. 8 pieces and soaked in milk, then full and covered with another slice, 4 remaining. It is deliciously cooked under the woodcocks. You can fry it separately and then put the juice in the delicious. Spit roasted birds. Peel the birds and put them, gutted or not, according to the quality, in salt with salt and pepper. Cover them in very fine oil and turn them from time to time. They must marinate at least a half hour before roasting them. Then they are put on the spit with a slice of lard and sage leaf for each bird. They are cooked in the oven by placing under one side burning ashes and wetting them from time to time with the oil the whole length of the skewer. If they are small, they cook very soon. The heads remain almost firm. Prepare some lard wrapped in paper and put it on a large fork. If it catches fire, it is lard. For large spit, 2 ounces of lard are used. Cacciatore hare, good in the pan. Prepare the hare the day before by removing the skin and then wash it well in plenty of water to lighten it. Then put it in a deep bowl with a glass of vinegar and enough water to cover it and keep it turned so that it can take the vinegar in well. Prepare the sage, rosemary, parsley, onion, mezzana sativa, and pound finely. Then cut the slices of lard, take a couple of herbs and a slice of lard, and with the tip of the knife, cut and put in the hare. It is cooked in a trowel with 2 ounces of butter and 2 ounces of lard, a little fine oil, half an onion with cloves and cinnamon. It is cooked slowly with fire underneath and a little above it. It takes 3 hours to cook it well, making it tender and tasty. Halfway through cooking, add half a glass of water. Good Francesca Locatelli Gubana. Flour, half a funto, old measurement. Fresh butter, half. Quarter of an egg, one. White wine, 2 fingers of a glass, or half water and half wine, salt. The dough is formed by mixing until bubbles form, full. Juniper berries, 1 funto. Blonde sugar, half a funto, cinnamon for 2 coins, 1 grated lemon, Spanish grapes, 1/4 funto, good honey, 2 abundant fingers of a glass, 2 whole eggs with salt, butter, 1/4, a little is kept aside for the casserole. When the dough is ready, it is first wet with the egg, then the well-prepared dough, the honey, and then the butter in small pieces. One forms the gubana and cooks it in the oven, either in the tin bucket or in the casserole. Truffles. The truffles are placed in fresh water and then cleaned of their dirt with a brush. Sometimes they are boiled with wine, going back to brushing them after that. Since the truffle's skin has a good taste, it can be cooked in sauces destined to be strained. They are used in light, non-acidic dishes. Once they have been peeled, they are cut in really thin slices and stir-fried in butter and salt. Then they are added, still warm, to the dish. For darker sauce, they are left to marinate a few hours, sliced in wine or cooked with it. Mustard with wine. 1 pound of sugar, 1 pound of fine mustard, 1 liter of good white wine. Beat well all together and add an onion, garnished with cloves, and leave to marinate 48 hours. Put it in a deep bowl, then eat in a large iron pan, and after having mixed it well, hang the hot pan with an iron rod and leave it to boil until it is almost cold. Make sure it is well cooked. Then mix everything well and put in small flasks and close with sealing wax. Leave it to rest some time before using it. It tastes better. Almost 20 years later, Carlotta, now a wife and queen of her house, will buy a cooking book entitled, What Will I Cook for My Guests? The cooking suggestions ranged from desserts for tea to starters and sauces, meat, fish, and soups. The author was Eta Polesini. Maybe she stole some recipes from the mother-in-law's family, she thought maliciously.